Welcome to another episode of the Wednesday Conversation. I'm Pastor Dusty, and I'm here with Pastor Bob Thune of Corndale Church. On Wednesdays, we sit down to talk about how the gospel of Jesus Christ connects to the questions and issues of everyday life. And today, we're talking about the casino economy.
Chris Emmelman is not with us.
Again.
I'm going to be...
Chris needs to bring snacks.
Amen.
The next time he comes.
Chris, if you're listening... We're going to need you to bring snacks next time you show up here. I'm going to be referencing a Substack article from Derek Thompson. We're not going to link it in the show notes because it'll be behind a paywall for most of you anyway. But Derek Thompson wrote a piece recently that I saw a lot of people online retweeting and saying, hey, this is an important analysis. And essentially what was curious to me about it was Dusty and I have been talking a lot about two things. One is loneliness and just the sort of growing social isolation that's epidemic in America and even in Christian circles. And then we've been talking a lot about gambling and especially the rise of sports gambling. I'm going to read you some stats in this article that will probably shock you about how mainstream the sort of how gambling and especially sports betting has become sort of like woven into the fabric of our entertainment. You've probably seen recently the scandals in the NBA with some players and coaches getting arrested for basically betting on games and throwing games and manipulating the outcomes of sports competitions. Derek Thompson basically took all that and kind of did an analysis of it. And he said, hey, let me do a little deeper analysis of these trends that I think are related somehow. And I found it very interesting. And I thought it would be worth talking about on a podcast. I want to start by saying, man, if you're a young man listening, and by young, I mean under the age of 30. Man, if you're a young dude trying to find your way in life and walking with Jesus, more power to you. We're proud of you. Yeah. This article reminds me that there are some things working against you if you're in that season of life that are particularly challenging and that I think particularly affect men in different ways than women. So not everything we're talking about in this podcast will be specific to men, but the writer, the author of the article, is sort of writing about the loneliness epidemic among young men and its connection to gambling and sort of the ways that a lot of things in society are sort of working together to push men into isolation. And so I just want to sort of begin by saying, if you're a young dude and you're listening to this podcast and trying to walk with Jesus, more power to you.
Yeah, for sure. I was talking with my son in college about this particular article, shooting him a couple, you know, screenshots of my device here. And he said, yeah, I have friends who they have a severe problem with this.
Yeah. So I'm going to read a few excerpts from this piece. And then I want to talk about some of the things Derek Thompson is analyzing. And again, what I appreciated about this is he's just bringing together some areas that I think everyone who's concerned in our society about sort of where are things heading would be able to say, this seems challenging and a problem. This seems to be a problem. I'm not sure this is a good sign. He's kind of trying to get underneath all of that and say, let me frame all this up. So he writes this. I've been thinking recently about these guys who are dating less, socializing less, and leaving their home less while filling their media with porn and betting parlays. They seem to prefer the financial discomfort of losing a bet to the social anxiety of being rejected on a date. They find intimacy scary and gambling exciting. They furnish their rooms like high-tech monasteries and gravitate toward media that works like a slot machine. Risk aversion in the social sphere has combined with risk chasing in the market, and it's created a genuinely berserk modern life script. So one of the key trends he wants to point out is that a lot of young men are risk averse in the social sphere. They go out less, they date less, they have less friendships, but they risk chase, especially when it comes to sports betting. There's sort of like a high tolerance for like the risk reward of placing a bet, losing money, that kind of thing. And so he's going to work that out throughout the article.
Feels scary to talk to a girl, but completely like dopamine dump to spend a little bit of money in my bedroom on my computer.
Yeah. And to hopefully win some money, but I probably will lose it. Here's some of the data that I thought was interesting that he quotes. Outwardly, many of today's young people live healthier lives than any group in decades. They smoke less, they drink less, they use fewer drugs, they exercise more. But these healthy behaviors often come at the cost of social connection. With less drinking has come significantly less partying. The share of young people who say they attend or host social gatherings declined by about 70% in the last 20 years. America's fitness boom has also mostly come from an increase in solo workouts, particularly for young men. Every gender and age group is more likely to work out alone than they were at the beginning of the 21st century, which is a fascinating stat.
That is interesting.
They all post it on, they post their workout on social media. They're doing it by themselves. He concludes the analysis of some of the data this way. While I know that some men are lonely, I do not think that what afflicts America's young today can properly be called a loneliness crisis. It seems more to me like an absence of loneliness crisis. It is a being constantly alone and not even thinking that's a problem crisis. Americans, young men especially, are choosing to spend historic gobs of time by themselves without feeling the internal cue to go be with other people, because it has simply gotten too pleasurable to exist without them. The problem is not loneliness. The problem is that we've forgotten how to feel lonely in the first place. Mm. That's an interesting observation because he's sort of got a minority opinion there. There's a lot of people who have said, yeah, there's kind of a loneliness crisis among young men. They're very lonely. They're isolated. And what he's saying is, no, I think the problem is not loneliness. The problem is they've forgotten how to feel lonely.
Yeah.
Because loneliness would push you out toward relationship or help you seek friendship.
Yeah. A genuine loneliness would make me reach for relationship. And so it is interesting what he's saying here is, no, we don't even need to feel lonely anymore. We just numb it constantly.
Now, the title of the podcast is A Casino Economy. And where he turns the corner here is he wants you to see, okay, these, you know, many young men in America who are a little more alone, who kind of, you know, are making bets on their phone, but not hanging out with their friends. He wants now to connect the dots to how gambling is exploiting this loneliness factor and the tendency young men have toward risk. Here's what he writes. Roughly half of men between the ages of 18 and 49 have a sports betting account. Okay.
That feels like a lot.
By the way. Half of men 18 to 49 have a sports betting account. America's gambling compulsion extends far beyond sports, someone recently wrote in a New York Times op-ed. He quotes this New York Times episode as saying, thanks to a series of quasi-legal innovations by the online wagering industry, Americans can now bet on virtually anything from their investment accounts. Here, now we're back to the main article. He says, we talk a lot about the male loneliness crisis, but in my estimation, we don't talk enough about the male suckerification crisis. Young men are being continuously cultivated by their media to become dupes and suckers in service of the profits of an ever-expanding roster of gambling and gambling-adjacent industries.
Huge. Algorithms are targeting this reality.
Yes. And it's fascinating to me. I mean, my oldest son lives in the world of sports journalism. So, you know, sports media is his whole ecosystem. And I talk to him all the time about how much, since he started his job 4 years ago, how much wagering is now like embedded within the ecosystem to where it's like, you know, who's sponsoring this website? Well, it's DraftKings. And who's sponsoring this podcast? Well, it's Caesar's Sportsbook. It's like everything, you know, the way that people talk about how this team is going to play is like, well, Dust, do you think this guy's over under on 75 receiving yards tonight? It's the whole stats world is sort of designed to sort of revolve around the bets that you might place on the Monday Night Football game or on the Saturday football game. And so there's a whole ecosystem the dark side of capitalism that is very much exploiting this. And this author is exactly right that there's a suckerification of, hey, if you're a young dude, if you're a little bit lonely, and if you have a thirst for some risk and kind of, you know, there's something about putting money on the table that feels like it's kind of risky, we're going to tap that, and then we're going to extort all the money we can out of you.
Yeah.
We don't care about your well-being. We care about how much money we can make.
And we're going to get you early. We're going to get you early, especially when you're into sports and football and all of these things, so that we're going to partner with your desires and your activity and your entertainment, and also take your money.
Now, here's three concluding paragraphs. The pro-social script: date, marry, settle down, buy a house, have a kid, feels more like a luxury every year. The anti-social script: porn, posting, and parlays, feels easy and even costless. Mm. Since the 1970s, America has overregulated the physical world and underregulated the digital space. To open a daycare, build an apartment, or start a factory requires lawyers, permits, and years of compliance. To open a casino app or launch a speculative token requires a credit card and a few clicks. We made it hard to build physical world communities and easy to build online casinos. Mm. In short, the first half of the 20th century was about mastering the physical world. The first half of the 21st century has been about escaping it. This shift has moral as well as economic consequences. When a society pushes its citizens to take only financial risks, it hollows out the virtues that once made collective life possible: trust, curiosity, generosity, forgiveness. If you want two people who disagree to actually talk to each other, you build them a space to talk. If you want them to hate each other, you give them a phone. I think that's a pretty amazing sentence.
Super, super.
His point is, and this is instructive even for how we think about social media. If you disagree with someone, encountering them in person and having a face-to-face conversation is a categorically different experience than posting on them, or even posting in response to a post that they put in a digital forum.
All day.
It makes you engage them as a person. There's an embodied experience of their presence that just, you have to disagree with them and recognize they are human. But when we digitize that disagreement, it causes us to actually hate each other. And I don't see this person as a human. And what this author is saying is that our society has sort of digitized our lives in ways that make it possible to take risks that feel like they're really not a huge risk. I mean, betting $5 on a Monday night football game, who cares? Not a huge risk, right? The thing is, that's how young men get hooked on that kind of risk. And then this world pulls them in. But meanwhile, we're not helping them take the risks of talking to a girl, getting fired from a job, going and putting out a resume and seeking employment, those kinds of things. And so there's this high risk in the digital world, low risk in the physical world, that sort of inverts the way that God designed us to work. And that's why we talked about the casino economy, because this author is saying that basically the gambling industry is sort of driving the economy now. Mm-hmm. There's a sense in which our whole economy is financialized in ways that work really well for banks and capital lenders and people that work in finance, but that the average guy trying to make his way in the world is less and less advantaged by that. And so part of what this author is arguing for is to say, hey, it's not just that guys are lonely and they're socializing less. It's that there's a way that the way we've constructed the world is pulling people into a digitized economy and pulling them out of a physical reality. And that in itself is perpetuating that kind of loneliness, isolation, and a weird kind of digitized risk that sort of replaces and feels similar to old school physical kinds of risk, but doesn't have the same reward.
It's just interesting that he mentions those virtues. I'm still stuck on that. The trust, the curiosity, the generosity, the forgiveness, those are all interpersonal, relational, risky things. Yes. And we've sucked all the risk out of interaction by doing this online casino economy approach to life.
Yes. I wonder if, you know, so there are, if you're a listener who is a young man or who cares about young men, what I want you to hear this author basically putting forward is that the deck is stacked against young men in young men in some specific ways. The pro-social script, as he calls it, you know, date, marry, settle down, buy a house, have a kid, is much more difficult to achieve than the anti-social script, which is porn, posting on social media, making parlay bets, all the things I can do from my phone or my iPad or my computer without having to interact in the physical world. What I want Christians to hear and embrace here is this is part of why embodied discipleship is so important and part of where the church needs to be a counterculture.
Yeah.
That the church needs to be a place where human beings can find real community and where we can help one another step out of this digital casino economy and into a real world of embodied discipleship, presence, and the kinds of long-term sacrifice and discipleship that are actually going to lead to a pro-social life.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm thinking about how, as you're talking, I'm like, man, how do we do that? Like what does that mean for ministry activity to call some of these young men towards risk, in an embodied way that isn't gonna, or that can compete basically with the digital way. I don't know what that is, but we're going to have to get more creative about it.
Well, I wonder if it starts with just the same basic things that Christians have always done, you know, mercy ministry, serving those who are in need, showing up and helping people who need physical kinds of help, whether that's building something, constructing something, helping someone in a very, you know, hands-on, I'm present here kind of a way, mentoring a kid at the elementary school who needs someone to just read a book with them and, be someone he can look up to. Those kinds of embodied stepping into the world in ways that serve other people rather than withdrawing from the world in ways that sort of mimic risk, but the risk is all digitized. I think I'm coming to more conviction that we just need to be conscientious objectors to much of the technology that's all around us. We need to help men unplug, especially younger men who haven't. It's one thing to have built a life in the physical world with real friendships and embodied relationships, and then sort of you also have a phone because you need to communicate, versus to grow up in a world where your entire experience is digitized and now you're trying to step toward a more physically present embodied friendship. That's going to take a different kind of work.
I've been thinking also about how interactive video games have also helped pave the way to this. Now I'm not a gamer guy. Okay. But I'm also not throwing video games under the bus. Okay. I get it. If you're a gamer, that's fine. but it's interesting to think about, like, Bob, if you and I are playing Super Mario Bros, you know, back in the day, if I could have played with you online, I would have played longer, you know, because it would have been more engaging.
I had to come to your house to play Super Mario Bros.
So you didn't do that because, like, you're like, well, let's just, I guess I'm done playing this game. Let's go outside and play football,
right?
You know, but it's interpersonal.
Yeah.
There's like humans here.
Yeah.
Oh, the video game's over. Now there's a human here.
Yeah.
So it's interesting how the internet interactive video gaming has also paved the way for me to just easily adopt the casino in my pocket.
I was talking with someone recently who had a family member who moved to a new city because he had some friends in that city that he knew through gaming, through online interaction, right? And he moved there because he's like, well, I know these people. But he actually had no embodied friendship with them. And so when he moved to the city, they actually didn't want to like hang out with him. They were fine with the with the relationship of like, we game together.
Yeah.
And that's weren't like, I don't want to have coffee with you. I just want to game, you know? And so to this guy's credit, he was sort of trying to move toward an embodied relationship with some people that he thought he knew. But in reality, those people were just fine with the disembodied online relationship. They didn't want actual real life friendship. And I thought that's a great barometer for why this problem is so corrupting to our social life is just that it there's a sense of relationship, but it's not relationship, you know, in the same way that you can interact with people online and think, well, I know that. Well, I don't know that person. Actually, I've never met them. I interacted with them online. They're a follower on a social media account or a friend on Facebook that I've never actually met in real life.
I'm also thinking about how we have to grow. Like, I'm talking to myself here. Like, what I need to do is stop assuming a pro-social script, as Thompson would say here. And I need to help men and young women pursue embodied relationship with one another.
Yeah.
You know, like in the 90s, it's like, hey, don't get too close to that girl, you know, leave some room for the Holy Spirit, all the dating sex talk that existed back then. And now you actually have to say like, hey,
go talk to someone.
Why aren't you asking that girl out over there? She's a Christian. You're a Christian, you know? And so we actually have to, as older men and women, grow in our pursuit of discipling the fact that we're discipling a younger generation that doesn't trust itself very much to move towards relationships.
Yeah. I think eschatology is another piece of the answer here. The casino economy, or as this guy talks about, the suckerification of young men. Part of what that requires to get out of that is a pulling back of the curtain, a realizing, like, I just want, you know, this article focuses on young men. I'm not sure this is a young men specific concern or problem, but I'm trying to follow the article's lead here. But I think, you know, part of what that suckerification, part of what creates that is the myth that, oh man, if I hit this bet, if I make this parlay and hit this bet, man, I can make $200 tonight. You know, that's the carrot that's dangling out there at the end of the stick is, hey man, you can make some money doing this. And what I think helps to disempower the digitization of our lives and the gamification of our lives is a seeing behind the curtain that actually you are a product that's being exploited by a company that's making money off you. What I always want to tell people, I'm going to have a little soapbox right here in the podcast. I have, there's so many people in our church that I love who, like, on my social media, it comes up and it's like a video of them, you know, with their phone, like talking to the phone, like people do nowadays, you know, where it's like they're filming themselves having a little monologue with their phone. And so what's coming up on my screen is like this person looking into the camera, talking about something that happened in their day or something that they're concerned about. And what I want to help people see is like, hey, do you know who wins in that? The company that owns the social media platform. Like, I don't get to know you any better by watching you pontificate about something. Who's winning in that is Facebook or WhatsApp or Instagram or, you know, whoever the platform is that's behind that. You're the product. And I think having your eyes open to that like, okay, social media can be a fine tool for staying in touch with people that I don't see very often, or for me, gathering my news, understanding some things about the world. Great. It's a tool for certain purposes, but it is a profit engine that drives a bottom line for a company. And I think Christians having more skepticism of that and realizing, like, you know who makes money off, you know, young Christian men betting $50 on Monday Night Football? You know who makes money off that? DraftKings shareholders.
Yeah.
I mean, that's who's making money. It ain't you. I mean, it's not even the other people betting. I think when you wagering on sports has this sense to it that, like, oh, it's kind of a way to, like, compete. Like, my buddy's a Chiefs fan and I'm a Raiders fan, and so I'm putting $10 on the Raiders and he's putting $10 on the Chief, and I won and he lost. And so it's a way of us, like, you know, actually, do you know who's winning off that? DraftKings or what? There's a platform that's making money off you, and becoming aware of that, the way that eschatology, the way the book of Revelation pulls back the curtain and says, hey, behind that is the beast and the false prophet and the harlot and these entities, these principalities and powers that exist to corrupt people and to pull us away from affection for Christ and to make us despairing and disheartened, or to help us make foolish decisions that waste our money. That's who wins in that. And there's a way that Christians seeing that has a disempowering effect. And we go, yeah, I don't want to participate in that. I don't want to be part. I don't want my energy going to help that company make more money off the world.
I'm and not going to be your product.
Yeah. That can be a good thing. You know,
this is an interesting overall. This is just an interesting article for me to read. It really stopped me in my tracks because I have young kids, you know, in this bracket, and I have young men in this bracket.
Yeah.
And, you know, as a parent, it obviously strikes a certain chord with me. And I think pastorally, we just have to wake up a little bit to, hey, this is out there. If you haven't seen it, it's coming for you. And it's definitely already in every young man's pocket in your gospel community. And so we have to, and the algorithm piece is, I'm waking up more and more to the algorithm piece, especially after the Charlie Kirk thing.
Hmm.
I realized how much I didn't know about algorithms. Like I thought I had general knowledge, and it's very detailed and specific. And so this casino economy is very specific as well.
That's another thing I like to point out to people is everything you're seeing on social media is whatever the company wants you to see. It's not like whoever posted most recently. If you're seeing Dusty White show up in your Instagram feed, it's because Meta wants you to see that. It's not it's not because Dusty just posted most recently and it just came up. It's that algorithm is feeding you what you're seeing. So it very much is a curated, it's already curated by some machine or some entity that's showing you what you want to see. I want to say this, Dusty, when we talk about a topic like this, you know, we always talk about the purpose of this podcast is to help us see how the gospel of Jesus Christ connects to everyday life. When we talk about a topic like this, we're doing so for at least three reasons. One, because we want young men who are the focus of an article like this to become aware of and to be sort of awakened to the battle that they're in and see like, all right, I got to swim upstream. I've got to be countercultural. I've got to choose to follow Jesus. Second, because we want the church to be a counterculture. And so in listening to a podcast like this, if you're 70 years old and you're like, all right, cool. I'm not a young man. I'm not gambling on my phone. Great. What you need to see is you need to help build a church community where people can find belonging and where they can find discipleship and where there's embodied presence that sort of helps people step out of some of these patterns into a healthier life. And then third, because I want Christians to be aware of the social environment that we're ministering in and know where do we need to be conscientious objectors? Where do we need to push back against or be awakened to influences that we need to resist and ways we need to help people around us grow? So to your point, Dusty, the fact that specifically young men are particularly vulnerable to sports gambling. Cool. To the extent that those guys are in my life, I want to be able to put my arm around and be like, hey, dude, what are you gambling on? Just having that conversation can be really transformative for me and for the person I'm talking to. So for those three reasons, helping people who are in this demographic and sort of face these issues, two, helping the church be a counterculture, and three, helping Christians be attuned to realities in our society and our economy that are stacked against discipleship to Jesus. And so hopefully in talking about this topic, it's sort of crossing all three of those things off the list. We're trying to help younger men, we're trying to help the church, and we're trying to help Christians in general be attentive to the culture around us and acknowledge places where we need to be conscientious objectors. We're going to have to swim upstream because my perspective is there's a lot of money right now pouring into online gambling, and the lobby here is strong. And so this isn't going away anytime soon.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people making a lot of money off dudes betting on DraftKings.
Yeah.
And that's not going to change anytime soon. There's a lot of money flowing to the NFL and the NBA and all kinds of other sports leagues because of these gambling wagering deals. Yeah. And so you're going to have to intentionally, as a disciple of Jesus, know what it means to conscientiously resist and object to the gamification of sports.
Yeah. I think that's a good word. And it reminds me of just brick and mortar and how you don't have to go. I don't have to drive over to Iowa from Nebraska anymore
Ooh,
to go to the casino, right? And so That's interesting. The other interesting thing is, you know, the NBA, the NFL, college sports, all these people, they've all figured this out too. Mm. So it used to, I feel like, and maybe I'm wrong, but it seemed like gambling and sports were always like these separate things.
Yep.
And now, as we've even seen in the recent news that Thompson references, they've all figured it out also. Like the NBA's fine with it. MLB's fine with it. You know, there was a Pete Rose scandal a long time ago, and that was like a big thing. And now it's actually like, well, this is going to do well for all of us. So let's just welcome this. And that's a totally different game than I have to go to a casino or I have to find a bookie. And now those people are all connected,
yeah,
and making money off of one another. And they're totally fine with it.
Yeah.
That's a different day.
Yep. So there are ways that our culture can encourage vice or encourage virtue. And we are certainly in a moment culturally where there are a lot of incentives toward encouraging vice. That's what the whole gambling industry is. It's what the whole weed industry is. It's entities that are there to make money off people's vices. And as Christians, we have to be conscientious of that and clearly opposed to that and ready to work upstream in the other direction in our own souls and lives and in the lives as we're discipling other people and walking with other people. So I hope that this topic and this podcast helps open your eyes to the gamification, the casinoification of a lot of our economy, and helps you become attuned to the ways that discipleship to Jesus Christ is going to require us to move in a different direction and be conscientious objectors.
The goal of this podcast is to equip our own church for discipleship and mission. So if you're a Christian or a church leader in another context, thanks for listening in. We pray that this conversation might be helpful to you as you minister in your context. We always love to hear from listeners, so if you have thoughts, questions, or future podcast topics, send us an email at podcast@cdomaha.com. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time for another episode of the Wednesday Conversation.